Welcome to the interview from Neos Cosmos. Today's guest is someone really quite exceptional, Professor Vasso Apostolopoulos, the Prior Vice Chancellor of Research Partnerships at Victoria University, a major figure in immunology and research. She has a swag of 100 awards for outstanding results in research and immunology. And in fact, what's really interesting, the professor was one of the first researchers in the world to develop the concept of immunotherapy for cancer in the early 90s, and it's now being used by thousands of people. Before I go on and wax lyrical about Professor Vasso Apostolopoulos, welcome Vasso to our program.
Welcome, and thank you for inviting me to your studios.
Thank you for being here. Now, I'm really fascinated. I was reading all about you today, and I didn't know that we've got vaccines, immunotherapy for cancer. What is that about?
So basically, immunotherapy is a scientific word. Vaccine is the everyday word. It means the same thing. It's using the person's immune system to use it, to stimulate it, and then the own person's immune system will fight disease. That's what it is. So you're stimulating the person's immune system.
How does it work with cancer? Give me an example. I mean, I'm not a scientist. Most of our readers aren't. But give me an example of a cancer situation where you have had such input that thousands of people are using immunotherapy right now. How did that happen?
So traditionally, vaccines are, you know, to something that's foreign to the body, like a virus. And, traditional vaccines were made by taking a little bit of the virus, they inactivate it, so it's not virulent, it doesn't cause disease, and they would use that to inject the person so their body could recognize it and develop an immune response. They will develop their cells will get stimulated, like these cells called antibodies and these cells called T cells. Anyway, so it stimulates their immune system. Once they get in contact with the real infection or the virus, the immune response is already present, and it basically controls and gets rid of the virus, and you won't have an effect. So they're like the traditional type vaccines that we know of. That's how they were originally made. However, over the years, we're trying to make the vaccines a lot safer because, you know, just you're getting a little bit of a virus and mushing it up and making it inactive. It's not as clean. So over the years, the guidelines have changed and we have to try and make vaccines safer. So that's why you come up with all these new technologies called mRNA, protein, etc., that we hear about. So what are they? So they're just new ways of developing that a part or a segment of the virus. We use that. It's safe. It's pure. It's a purified form. And we use that to inject and stimulate the body. Now, in regards to cancer, it's a little bit different because it's not a virus that causes the cancer, although now these days there's research coming up where some viruses are known to cause cancer. But, you know, like, for example, breast cancer, prostate cancer, they're more hormonal-type cancers. It's not something, it's not a virus that's causing it. So to develop a vaccine, you have to try and identify something that's on the cancer that's not on the normal cell. So for the cell to become cancerous, there's been a change. There's been a mutation. So when I did my work way back in the early 1990s, I had to identify something that's on the cancer cell that's not on the normal. So, you know, identified some markers, and I used that to stimulate the immune system. Okay, so the body will make an immune response to that marker that's present on the cancer, and then that will go and kill off the cancer. A lot of people are using my method, as you introduced just before. What does that mean? So I came up with a method of how to stimulate the immune system. So the whole idea is trying to find a way to stimulate the immune system. I mean, you could put in this marker that's on the cancer. You could put a little bit of virus or whatever you put into the body. But your body's not going to recognize it. It will, but it won't make a strong enough response. So you have to come up with a way of delivering it or a way of formulating it to try and activate a response.
I mean, that is mind-blowing. I mean, how does a Greek-Australian woman, a migrant background like us, born from what I read somewhere in St. Albans, is that correct, become one of the world's leading immunologists? I mean, in short answer, what drove you to this?
I think, like all of us, you know, we're all here from migrant parents. And I think the parent, it's the upbringing. And, you know, it's the parents, I mean, growing up, my parents' aim was for us to have an education. I mean, and I believe most of us in our generation, that was the aim. You had to go to university to get an education. That was the aim. So, and from a very, very young age, like, you know, I was like 4 years old, my father, he had taught me my times tables, you know. I didn't even know how to count, but I knew my times tables because my dad believed if you know your maths, you will succeed in life. That's the belief he had, right? So I knew my times tables from 4 years old. He also had a belief that if you know all the countries in the world and the capital cities, you will succeed in life. So 4 years old, here I am. I hardly spoke, but I knew all the capital cities and all the.
You knew where Belize was,
yeah.
New York, and
yeah, and also his, you know, his belief was also mythology. I had to learn Greek mythology, but I actually didn't learn that because I used to fall asleep. But anyway, so having that ground, like the basics, from a very young age, and sort of, you know, it was sort of in the family, you know, to do something, achieve something. We want you to go to university. I think that was our generation.
Was that driver, wasn't it?
It was that driver.
Yeah.
So that was sort of a driver all through primary school, high school, university. You know, I had a lot of bullying, a lot of et cetera, because, you know, I was a smart one. I didn't.
So you were being bullied by the other migrant kids and the non-migrant kids?
The ones that wanted to rebel, and I was sort of like a straight girl.
You were doing all the hard work, right?
All the hard work, yeah.
So when everyone's out going to the disco, Russell's doing the work at home, right?
Yep. But so I think the main thing is the home environment is very, very important. If you have that upbringing and that persistent, like, you know, it's how important education is, I think it's very important, and that's what contributes.
You said something interesting, and I'll go in this 1 minute, and then we can go into some. You said something really interesting. You said that we all had that, which is true. We all had this pressure to go to uni. But you're quite exceptional. I mean, this is not just going to uni and succeeding academically. I mean, you've done some really groundbreaking things. So what was it about immunology that grabbed you and not law or not medicine or something else? What is it inside you? Was there something specific that impressed you about it?
Look, when I went to uni, to be honest, I mean, I naturally geared towards the math science subjects because I was always good at maths, you know, like probably all of us. We went to school, grade prep, we didn't even know how to speak English, it was all Greek, right?
That's right.
So naturally our English was not as good, my English was not as good as my maths, so I sort of geared towards those subjects. So naturally you go towards the math science. So I went to uni. I did science, but, you know, with the aim, I went to uni, but I didn't even know what science was, really, to be honest. I thought, I'm going to do science, I'll do the biomedical science, to go on and do something else, like, you know, dentistry, optometry, something else, because I didn't know what science was, because we didn't grow up, I had no idea what research was. But in third year, when I was a third year at the university, one of our lecturers came down and he gave us a paper. A paper he had published, a research paper, and he had published on about HIV and that the virus gets inside the cells and it takes over the cells and what
does. That excited you. There was something
and
interesting.
And I read this, but he told us, the only reason why I read it, I wouldn't have read the paper, but he told us, this paper will be on the exam. You're going to get examined. So, of course, I read the paper. Mind you, we went to the exam the day after. It wasn't on the exam.
He scammed you, really.
he just wanted us to read his paper. But when I read that paper, I'm like, wow, this is, like, exciting. It was like another world, you know. So I thought, this is what I want to do. Like, you know, you could actually go into the body and into the cells and understand what happens and understand diseases and why they occur. So that is what opened my curiosity. So then I went on and I did an honours degree, which is, you know, I did it in cancer, and then PhD.
That's fantastic. It's quite extraordinary. And I think it's a testament to the work that you've done. Now, all of us think and all of us argue in the last 2 years of COVID, we've had massive arguments in families, across friends and online, and all of us are vaccine experts. And yet I don't know much about it. And most of the people that I talked about who think they know much about it, by the end of the day, don't seem to know much about it. I mean, what is, let me just put this out there. First of all, we've got four vaccines now in Australia for COVID. We've got Pfizer, Moderna, AstraZeneca, and Novavax. I'll go to the moment about where others have more vaccines. But what is the difference between them? What is, for example, an mRNA, which is Pfizer and Moderna, a vector, which is AstraZeneca, and a protein-based vaccine? What is the difference between those four things?
Okay, so, you know, with the vaccines, I mean, there was a lot of hesitancy originally with people not wanting to take the vaccines because in their mind the vaccines were made at a very fast pace and that they weren't tested and that we're guinea pigs, that, you know, all these vaccines have been tested in us and, oh, of course, the new vaccines is a new disease, it's a new virus. But the methods used, you know, when I did my PhD, I submitted my PhD in 1995, so, you know, 94, 93, and I was working on vaccines, coming up with different ways of developing vaccines. I knew about these vectors, mRNA, protein, these type of vaccines. They were studied even from back then, so they were used in various clinical trials for different diseases, you know, but they were just new methods of develop, because I said originally, you know, virus or a vaccine, you just take a little bit of the virus or you mush it up and just inactivate it and use that. But because of the regulations are a lot stricter now, you had to make a highly purified, more sort of synthetic type form. So these methods were used from even 30 years ago. And before that, oh, that's when they sort of vaccines, sort of these highly purified vaccines sort of came in. So these methods have been known for many years. It's not new method. They're not new methods, which is one of the beliefs.
So what you're saying, just for a moment, the argument that these are new and we haven't had time to test them, what you're saying to me right now is that they've been around for 30 years. They've been tested in various clinical trials for other things. They're not new.
They're not new. The method is not new.
The method's not new.
Okay, so what is mRNA? What is vector?
Yes.
What is protein? Okay, so basically a protein, you take the core. You make it synthetically, so, you know, there's amino acids, they're synthetic, a long amino acid, many amino acids together is called peptide, a very big peptide is called a protein. So basically it's synthetic. You can make it in the lab, synthesize it. So, you know, the structure in regards to COVID, we know the structure of COVID. We know that most important region, which is that spike region. So we know what it looks like. We know the structure. So it's got, you know, 500 amino acids, and you just put them one next to each other, and you make it synthetically. So that's what a protein-based vaccine.
Protein-based.
Okay, so it's highly purified and synthetic. So, you know, so it won't cause any side effects or anything. So that's why, you know, we try to make these safer vaccines. The other one is trying to get the mRNA is basically using the genetic material of the virus. Not the whole virus, just that region. So instead of making it synthetically, you get the genetic materials. That's what mRNA means. A lot of people believe the mRNA vaccine will get into our genetics and will alter our genetics, but it's got nothing to do with your DNA. mRNA goes into the cell and that becomes protein. So the body, the cell makes into a protein, and the protein is what your immune system sees and makes the immune response.
So the fear that many people have expressed to me and others, and we've had arguments about it being high-tech, it being changing your DNA, it's completely wrong.
Completely wrong. It's completely wrong. People were trying to educate me. I mean, I've had lots of arguments with people, you know, from down the road. The neighbour down the road was arguing with me about, you know, the mRNA is going to get in our genetic material and it's going to alter our DNA.
They're trying to explain to me how they work.
But anyway, but the thing is, you know, so it's because people, I think there's a lot of misinformation and people, because things happen so fast and there's a lot of social media, which is one, there's a negative aspect to the social media where, you know, one person will tweet something and then they might tweet it a little bit wrong and a little bit wrong. So this just misinformation goes out. And then you've got the vector, which is the AstraZeneca one, which uses a vector. So basically you take a little bit of the genetic material of the virus, but on its own, sometimes it's not strong enough to make an immune response. So they find a way of delivering it into the body using a vector. So basically, they use a virus, for example, from a chimpanzee. That's what the AstraZeneca is. So it's a virus. It's a common virus that is in chimpanzees. It doesn't cause any virulence or any infection in humans. They take that and they insert part of the COVID virus in there. So that's sort of like a delivery. So it's delivery.
So the vector is a delivery mechanism, which is a delivery
It's a virus. So your body will see that and make a response to that, but also because there's part of the COVID in there, it will make a response to the COVID.
So bottom line, they're all safe.
They have been used in various clinical trials for cancer, for malaria, for influenza, for... The list goes on and on and on. There's a lot of different... Over the years, they've been going into the clinic... Clinical trials, you know, researchers get that information. Okay, it's working, not working well. Let's go back into the lab. Let's optimize it. Let's do another clinical trial. So that's what's happened over the last 20, 30 years. And then we've got to the stage now where it's fully optimized and they applied it to the COVID.
That doesn't mean that there might not be some side effects for some people, I suspect. There's something that can happen.
There are side effects to everything. I mean, you know, if you take... I don't know, if you give peanuts to
someone who
10,000 people, I mean, will be what's I think these days it's, what is it, a third of the people will have got peanut allergies or some sort of allergy to food. So even with food, people will get an allergic response or will get a side effect. So, you know, there, if you inject the general population, there will always be someone that will react.
Bottom line.
Even with food.
So yeah. I guess from a holistic point of view, if you're vaccinating 95% of Australia and let's say 70% of the modern or of the industrialised world, including China, you're safer than not being vaccinated. Is that right?
Definitely, because you know I must admit that we were in a lot of shutdowns, lockdowns. You know, it didn't sort of help with people's mental health and people's, you know, economic. There was a lot of economic
disruption,
etc. But one positive thing about that was, yes, we were all in lockdown, but that we didn't have as many deaths. So we were locked down. Not many people were getting COVID. We had very few cases. You know, most of the states in Australia didn't have any cases. Melbourne had the most, but then a few in Sydney. But most of them were COVID free. When they did open up, because people are saying, oh, they've opened up, now we're all getting COVID. But when they did open up, 95% of the population were vaccinated. So now people, of course, they're going to catch it, but they're not getting the serious side effects and there's very few dying. So if you look at the statistics, Australia might have a lot of cases now, but there are very few deaths because of they're vaccinated. Whereas at the time when we were in lockdown, Europe, USA, they were not vaccinated, but there were millions of people dying.
Well, the United States has lost a million people, which is extraordinary, more than any other.
Because they weren't vaccinated. So obviously, I think the lockdown was, I guess, okay, it was good and bad. So we were locked down, but when they opened up, we were all vaccinated compared to other countries where they were all open from day one, but they weren't vaccinated, so there were more deaths. So
the vaccine. In your mind, as someone who's a specialist or a professor in this, I should say, where are we going? Are we going to be having annual vaccinations for COVID? Before we started the program, I asked you, I said, is it endemic? And you said to me, no, it's still a pandemic. Let's go to that first. You say it's not endemic yet. It's still a pandemic. Is that right?
It's still a pandemic. The cases are increasing. So there are more. It's not over. We are getting increased cases in a lot of countries. We are getting because there are still a lot of countries where they haven't been vaccinated. You know, in a lot of the third world countries or poorer countries, they're not vaccinated. So there are deaths occurring even in vaccinated countries. There are still deaths. Why? Look, the virus is mutating at such a fast rate. The virus has actually mutated about 20,000 times.
Yeah, that's what you said before, 20,000 times. And we hear...
Probably even more. Maybe it's up to 30,000 now.
We hear key ones, or Omicron, Delta and all that, but you're saying 20,000
times. 20, probably even 30 these days. It was 20,000 probably a few months ago when I looked it up. But So let's say 20,000 times it's been mutated. We've heard about alpha, beta, gamma, delta, omicron, because they're the ones that have caused, that have altered the outcome of the disease. So it's, you know, been more infectious, the disease outcome is worse, etc. So they're the five that we know, but there are 20,000 mutations that have occurred. So, and the virus is continuing to mutate at a very fast rate, because that's what viruses do. So ultimately what we will need to do is to have an annual vaccine. I mean, we all have, I mean, there's the influenza virus vaccine. It's yearly. You know, some people say, oh, I did it last year. Why should I get the vaccine this year for the flu vaccine? Why is it the vaccine this year? Because the vaccine this year is different to the vaccine last year.
Because it mutates.
Because it mutates. So they've included the new mutations in the new flu vaccine this year. So the same thing will happen with
Efficacy is going to be there. We're going to have, what, once a year? We're going to be three a year? What's in
probably
your
once a year. Once a year. At the moment, you know, they've advised two, three, four injections. But the three and four injections, mainly it's to the older people, or they're saying, well, at one stage I was saying 60 and above, but I think it's predominantly 70 and 80 and above. Those with underlying health conditions, even the younger people that have some underlying health conditions. So it's recommended for them to get vaccinated, or those that are immune compromised as well.
Yeah, interesting, the underlying health conditions. I mean, if you look at it carefully, a lot of us have underlying health conditions. Yep. I mean, I've got diabetes type 2. I don't feel bad. I take care of it. But that's an underlying health condition, isn't it, in some ways?
Well, type 2 diabetes is a little bit... Yeah, it's an underlying health condition. And the outcomes was people with type 2 diabetes were worse off than those that don't have type 2 diabetes. They're at a higher risk category, but it doesn't mean that, you know...
No.
Well, if they're vaccinated, then they're fine.
Are you optimistic about the way we're dealing with COVID and the future with COVID?
I think, you know, we've dealt it right. You know, we needed to have the necessary safety measures, lockdowns. I mean, that was correct at the time. The idea was to protect as many people from getting COVID and dying at the time when we were not vaccinated. So I think that was a good thing. The world, one positive thing that's come out of COVID is, look, we've been trying to make vaccines forever, and you'll probably say, well, you know, people are making vaccines and or drugs, and we never hear about them, then they never get produced. Why did these vaccines get produced so quickly? I think with COVID, because it was an emergency, it was a pandemic, all the researchers around the world, they shared data, whereas usually researchers don't share data amongst themselves.
So it was a massive sharing. It was a cloud sharing. And all
there
the,
was yeah. mass funding put in, worldwide funding. A lot of money was put in all at once, and it was able to be made quickly. Because, you know, to make a vaccine, if you have the infrastructure and you have everything set up, to actually make a vaccine takes a week. It doesn't take long to make a vaccine.
Right. Okay. Right?
If you have the information you're set up, it takes a week to make a vaccine. It doesn't take a long time to make a vaccine. So what takes a long time is funding to try and get it into humans and do the testing.
So the cost is the distribution and implementation of the vaccine and testing
in the humans, yeah.
The actual making of it is quite simple if you have the infrastructure.
Yeah. So what happened, the vaccine was made quick because it's no big deal. You mean you can make a vaccine quite easily to any disease. It's not hard to make. It's quite easy. But what's the hard part is testing it in humans. But because there was a lot of money, a lot of effort, you know, all the hospitals in the world were willing. People were volunteering to get vaccinated. I mean, we had that interest, and you know, thousands of people were injected immediately. So we got results quick.
A vaccine, and correct me if I'm wrong, like AstraZeneca needs to be 20 degrees below zero.
Is that okay, yeah.
And something like Novavax doesn't. It can be in an ordinary fridge. What is that? I don't understand why. Because that's an extra impost or a cost, isn't it?
It is a cost. It's just the way the formulation is made. So protein is more stable, or, you know, so it doesn't need these minus 20 or minus 80 degree refrigeration, whereas, you know, some of the vector ones, it's just they're not stable at at higher temperatures. So it's just the way the formulation is made.
Is it better? Any of these, like, if I say you Pfizer, Moderna, AstraZeneca, Novavax,
they're the same.
You're the same.
Much of a muchness. The aim of all of these is to stimulate the immune system. So it doesn't matter which one you get, the end result is the same.
And the efficacy lasts, wanes as we go on, doesn't it?
Yes. But what we're seeing with this, with COVID, it's interesting. It's a different type of virus because it's even people that have had COVID, because usually, you know, if you've had a virus, you say, well, I've had the virus, I won't catch it again in my life, or of any other virus. But we're seeing that even people that get the virus, 3, 4, 5 months later, they'll get it again. I think maybe because there's a lot of reasons. The behavior of this virus is completely different. I mean, we're still learning because it's a new virus. We're still learning about it. But also, I think it's the fast rate of mutations of the virus. So, you know, I was, for example, you know, I had COVID last year, for example. Well, not me, I'm just saying a person will have COVID last year. The COVID they'll get today is completely different to the virus they got last year because it's been mutated so many times, it looks different. You know what I mean? So
in that sense, how anxious should we be, or should we be anxious? If we're vaccinated, should we be anxious or just concerned and careful?
Look, you know, being vaccinated is good because, you know, we're a step ahead. So when a person's not vaccinated, they get the virus. They're not vaccinated. They will get infected with the virus. Naturally, the body will get rid of it. In most people, you know, everyone's going to die. A few people will overreact. A few people will pass away. The ones that don't, their body will naturally make a response and get rid of it. But to make that response, it takes about 10 to 14 days. You know, you don't get a virus today and tomorrow you'll have antibodies produced. It takes about 10 to 14 days. So you will be infected for 10 to 14 days before your natural immunity kicks in and gets rid of the virus. Now, if a person is vaccinated, from day one, they've already got that immunity. From day one, the antibodies will start blocking and killing the virus.
And that is why.
So that's the difference.
And that is why, and I read something you said too, that's why if you're vaccinated, the period that you have to isolate is shorter than if you're not vaccinated.
Right? Yes, if you're not vaccinated, you know, it's 10 to 14 days or 14 days minimum isolation because you're still infectious. You know, I mean, you haven't. Your body will make an immune response, let's say 10 days, then it's going to kick in and start fighting off the virus. Whereas if you're vaccinated, from day one, your body will start fighting off the virus. That's why the period is only about 7 days. Within 6, 7 days, you're out of isolation.
So, Vasu, are you working now on any vaccines yourself? Are you working on anything like that?
Yeah, so we work on a range of, I mean, I don't only work on vaccines, but in regards to the vaccines, I work on, see, once you have the method and you know how to make vaccines and you've generated a method where you are able to stimulate the immune system, you could develop a vaccine for anything, you know. I've got an interest in multiple sclerosis, so I've got about 10 candidate vaccines which are ready to go in humans.
So tell me about that, because I was interested, I was reading about your MS stuff. How would a vaccine impact on multiple sclerosis?
So basically multiple sclerosis, yeah, so this is, we call it vaccine because we're using the immune system, but we sort of, what's happened in multiple sclerosis, there's type 1 diabetes, rheumatoid arthritis, those type of diseases, they're autoimmune diseases. So your body is, basically there's an overreaction, overproduction of these immune cells and it's killing the self, which it shouldn't be. So what we're doing is immune modulation, we call it. So it's so basically we're altering those cells and we're telling them to switch off, to stop attacking. So that's what my aim is with the multiple sclerosis. So we're switching off the cells that are doing the damage.
And where are you there with that now?
Yeah, so we're ready. We actually were about to start a clinical trial just before COVID. COVID kicked in and then everything just sort
of
got stopped and we're hoping we'll start again soon.
It's amazing work. I mean, do you ever go home at night and think, my God,
I've got nothing to do now.
No. Do you ever relax? Do you ever actually have some downtime and not think about a catastrophic virus and saving the world. Do you ever
So, you know, I try to occupy myself. You know, I do go for walks. I go running, I walk. I go to the basketball every Friday night, Saturdays. I go and...
You like basketball.
Yeah, I like basketball. And I also... I'm also a statistician and I score at the basketball.
Like, something like.
And someone the other day said to me, you know, you're a professor and you're so busy. I mean, when I saw you, you know, at the basketball scoring and doing all the stats, I mean, he goes, don't you have anything else to do? I said, I'm doing that because I want my mind to relax.
So you relax by doing stats. yeah. Right, ultimately, I want to get this straight, right? So I love stats. I do journalism. I love economy. But you relax... for something small, statistical analysis, yeah. Right? So that's your little lightweight stuff, right?
Yeah. No, fantastic. And especially over COVID, what I did a lot of our because you know we're working from home, so I did a lot of my meetings, you know, because it's over the phone, Zoom, and all that. But I would like some of the ones that weren't, I didn't have to show my face. I would be walking while I'm
on
a meeting. So I think that's one positive thing about COVID is that it's made us. Sort of adjust and...
More reflective maybe in some ways.
Well, I think pre-COVID, if I had said to my work, I want to work from home once a week, well, if I had said it, they would have said, no, you have to be here face-to-face at work.
We were just talking about that before.
Et cetera. But now with COVID, they've all told us come back to work and half of the people have said, yep, okay, I'm going to come back to work, but I want to work from home on Fridays and Mondays. And it's like, okay, like not even... You don't even think about it. It's like, okay, you work from home twice a week.
I guess the only...
That's one good thing about COVID.
Well, that's a good thing, but well, I'll say before we close off, one challenge would be if at university level for students. We've lost some of that student interaction, but they're coming back, aren't they?
They're coming back face-to-face. I think student life is very important for students.
Because I know for a fact student life during COVID... For us, it's all right, but student life, if you're a new uni student, as my son was, it was quite difficult the first year. You need that.
You need the interaction. Yeah.
Just people, hang out, go to a bar, do something. Well, look, you are optimistic, I suspect, for the future of
COVID. I don't think I answered that question, but look, COVID's going to be here forever. It's not going to disappear. It's just the only disease that's disappeared from the world, the only virus that we were successful in eradicating is smallpox. And all the other viruses that have come into the world have not disappeared. They're still there. We just develop immunity and we sort of keep it endemic.
So when does COVID become endemic in your mind? I mean, is this something you want to...
It will take time. Probably take a few more years, as the virus is mutating, we have, more new vaccines to the mutated forms because at the moment still the vaccines are to the original form, 20,000 mutations previously. Okay, so now new vaccines are coming out or they're being tested at the moment of the mutated ones. So as these new vaccines come out which cover the mutants, then, our immunity will be better because we're able to cover all the mutations all the way to that point. So eventually it will become, epidemic or just isolated to a few countries, but it will take time.
It'll take
a few more years.
Like the cold is or like the flu?
Yeah, it will eventually be like.
And we've
like
got a bad flu season right now, haven't we? You'd be so, everyone's.
Yeah, you know what's funny? It's that, we get sick at the moment, I was sick just recently and I did about 5 rat tests thinking, I've got COVID. But I sort of, you forget. That you could also get the flu.
Yeah, that's right. You get the flu.
We all think, we all got COVID when we're sick, but, we forget about all these other diseases. But you know what's interesting? During COVID and during the lockdown, the flu was very low. The number of cases that people got.
Just low, very low.
I guess because we weren't.
We weren't going out.
We weren't going out.
We weren't seeing each other.
Isolating at home.
Well, Vaso, thank you very much. And Professor Vaso Apostolopoulos, thank you very much for coming in today. It was wonderful. And keep up the good work, all right? Let's see if you can save us between stats and basketball,
all right? No worries, okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.